Comic book, comic book, does whatever a book does. Read by us while drinking, incoherent rambling. Look out, this is our podcast.
Hi everyone, thanks for tuning in to the SJW Comic Book Club X-Minisode number 5. I'm your host Monte, reading and analyzing the X-Men from start to finish, from the beginning in 1963, all the way up to the present. In this episode, I'm going to be talking about the return of the X-Men in 1975. As talked about in the last X-Minisode, Marvel stopped making new X-Men stories in 1969, and the X-Men were not reintroduced until 1975. Up until then, some of the characters had made cameos in other stories, and Beast even joined the Avengers, which in 1975, he is still part of the Avengers. And this is also the time period where Beast gets his furry blue look that has become the main design of the character. Before this, he just looked like a normal guy with big hands and feet. But during the 70s, he experiments on himself and turns into the blue furry Beast that everyone knows so well. But there were no more stories that actually featured the X-Men in the early 70s. That didn't happen until May 1975. So that's where we're going to start, with Giant Size X-Men number 1, Deadly Genesis. This was written by Len Wein and drawn by David Cockrum. The story opens with Professor X recruiting some new X-Men. So if you remember, in the last story that we read, Professor X was rendered unconscious. Obviously, this is many years later, so he's fine now. And he's looking for new X-Men in order to replace the old team. Nightcrawler is being chased by a mob in Germany. Wolverine is hawked by Professor X from Department K, the Canadian equivalent of S.H.I.E.L.D. Banshee is just kind of hanging out. Storm decides to abandon her status as a goddess in Kenya. Sunfire hesitantly leaves Japan. Colossus is recruited from a collective farm in the Soviet Union. And Thunderbird leaves the Apache Reservation. So as you can see, some of these characters are characters that we've seen before, like Banshee and Sunfire. And then most of them are completely new characters. So Nightcrawler, Wolverine, Storm, and Colossus. They're all new characters. Nightcrawler is probably the most visually distinct of them. He's blue and furry with a tail. His appearance is very demonic, and his main power is that he can teleport. Wolverine, I mean, everyone knows Wolverine's powers. He can regenerate, and he has the adamantium claws. Banshee, of course, has his sonic powers, his sonic scream. Storm is able to manipulate the weather. Sunfire, his plasma beams. And Colossus is able to transform himself into organic living metal. Oh, and also Thunderbird is a new character. He basically has enhanced strength and speed and durability, so his physical capabilities are enhanced. And then it's also kind of hinted at that he has superhuman senses, so he can see better, smell better, hear better than the average person. So all of these characters are approached by Professor X, and they decide to join his new X-Men team. And the new X-Men assemble in Xavier's mansion, and we learn that the original X-Men, the reason that he needs to replace them, is because they're no longer there. They've gone missing on a mission. And that's true of all of them, with the exception of Cyclops. We learn from Cyclops that the original X-Men went missing on the island of Krakoa. They went there searching for a new and potentially dangerous mutant, only to find that the island itself is the mutant, and all of them were kept captive with the exception of Cyclops, who was allowed to escape. The new X-Men eventually arrive on Krakoa and pair off to search for the originals. They fight their way through the island, revealing the dysfunction of the team as they go. So they're not really very used to working as a team. Obviously, they're brand new, but also their personalities don't really mesh, a lot of them. There's a lot of personality clashes on the new team. They eventually do find the original X-Men, and they release them from Krakoa, but this causes Krakoa to awaken and attack the X-Men, giving his origin story in the process. So Krakoa was created after atomic testing caused him to mutate into a sentient island that feeds on living beings. So once again, like with Sunfire, we're seeing the impacts of atomic testing and nuclear bombs. The X-Men's powers are largely useless against Krakoa, but they are finally able to defeat him when some of them combine their powers, specifically Cyclops and Havok, along with Storm and Iceman, and then that weakens Krakoa enough that Polaris is able to use her magnetic abilities to basically eject him into space, kind of saving the day. So, as I hinted at earlier, each new character has a very, very distinct personality, and I find these new X-Men a lot more interesting than the original five. I think that a lot of the writing of their characters, especially Wolverine, Nightcrawler, and Storm, the reason that they become such iconic characters is that from the beginning, their personalities are made really distinct and they're really well fleshed out. We don't really see that much of their origin stories, but even with the little that we see, it becomes really clear who they are as a character, and it makes it really easy to attach to them from the beginning. Also, all of the personality clashes on the team make that even more apparent. Like, it makes it even more clear who the characters are by looking at who clashes with whom. Wolverine clashes a lot with Cyclops, Colossus, and Thunderbird, and it makes sense for him as a character. He's very rebellious, he's very aggressive, and Colossus, for example, isn't very aggressive and doesn't really like conflict, so that defines their character. Thunderbird is also kind of a rebel, but in a very different way from Wolverine. Like, they're both very aggressive characters, but it makes sense that they would clash with each other as well because they're aggressive in different ways. And then also it makes a lot of sense that Wolverine would clash with Cyclops from the beginning, just because Wolverine is such a rebellious character that kind of bucks structure, and Cyclops is really obsessed with structure and needs it from the beginning. So in the future, a lot of the conflict between Wolverine and Cyclops is going to be about their mutual attraction to Jean Grey. But I mean, in this story, Wolverine hasn't even met Jean Grey yet, and he's definitely clashing with Cyclops already. There are some uncomfortable, like, noble savage stereotypes when it comes to Thunderbird. So Thunderbird is an Apache Native American, and I don't really know enough about the depiction of Native Americans and specifically like the culture of the Apache people to know, you know, what's stereotype and what's not. But a lot of it just, it feels a lot like the character of Thunderbird is really rooted in stereotypes. Like, I think at one point, Professor X says something to him about something about being an Indian giver, or something about the Apache not being as noble as everyone thinks that they are. All the characters are really well fleshed out, and I think that that's true for Thunderbird as well, but the reliance on those stereotypes really kind of takes away from the character. And also in this story, I realize that the more I think about Sunfire's character, the more that I realize that his character is also basically just a collection of anti-Japanese stereotypes. You know, misconceptions of what Japanese culture is. I don't know. I think that most of the characters are very well fleshed out, but with Thunderbird, with Sunfire, and even with Storm, there's a lot of stereotypes that are built into them, and a lot of stuff that, in, you know, looking from today's lens, would be a little bit uncomfortable. But considering that this is the 70s, that kind of thing is a little, it's sort of inescapable. I do still think that they deserve credit for including those characters in them and making them a little more complex, so that the stereotypes are there, but the stereotypes don't necessarily define those characters. Also, visually, the character designs in this issue are really, really great. And I think that's another thing that makes you attach a little bit more to the new X-Men and the new characters than you would with the original five. Because they're just so much more dynamic, even visually, than the original ones were. Moving on to the next story, we've got X-Men numbers 94 and 95, The Doomsmith Scenario. And these stories were published in August and October of 1975. They were written by Chris Claremont and Len Wein, and drawn by David Cockrum. This is the beginning of Chris Claremont's run as the main writer of the X-Men. Chris Claremont and this run is what made the X-Men so popular. Like, before, they had been kind of a cult classic. They had a following, but it was relatively small. And even though a lot of people really, really loved the characters, most comic book fans didn't really care that much about them. They were much more focused on the Avengers, the Fantastic Four, Spider-Man, those kinds of characters. But Chris Claremont and his writing is what brings the X-Men into being the most popular team in Marvel. So the story opens with Professor X calling the X-Men, old and new, into the great room of the mansion. He wants to talk about the future of the team, but before he can even begin, Sunfire really abruptly quits the team, and they're unable to convince him to stay. The other new X-Men agree to stay, but the original X-Men, with the exception of Cyclops, have decided to leave the team. Iceman, Jean Grey, Havok, Polaris, Angel, they all leave the team. The remaining X-Men are trained by Cyclops in the Danger Room, and they don't necessarily do well at first, but as time goes on, they do a better job of cooperating as a team. Meanwhile, at NORAD Command Center, the Animen, led by Count Nefaria of the mob-like Magia criminal organization, attack the base in an attempt to use its weapons to take over the world. And the Animen are the characters that I was thinking of. I don't remember if it was last minisode or the one before it, where they were very similar to the Savage Land Mutates. These are the characters I was thinking of. And they've appeared before in the Avengers, but this is their appearance in the X-Men. So back at the X-Mansion, the training session has ended in disaster when Thunderbird is injured and gets into an argument with Cyclops. This causes Cyclops to doubt his position as leader, despite being comforted by Nightcrawler, who is quickly being established as one of the team's peacemakers, along with Storm. The conversation between Cyclops and Nightcrawler is cut short when the X-Men are summoned by Professor X to stop Nefaria and the Animen. Unfortunately, the X-Jet is shot down using the military's base defenses, and the X-Men are almost killed. Cyclops' leadership allows them to save themselves from dying during the fall, and Nightcrawler teleports his way into the base. He's confronted by one of the Animen, but defeats him relatively easily and lets the rest of the X-Men into the base, where they're confronted by soldiers and the rest of the Animen, but they successfully fight their way to Count Nefaria, who attempts to flee in one of the base's jets. He's pursued by Thunderbird, who leaps onto the jet and begins tearing it apart, while Banshee flies behind, trying to convince him to get off the jet, let go, and let Banshee fly him to safety. Thunderbird refuses and continues to tear at the jet until it explodes, killing him. Banshee blames himself for failing to get Thunderbird off the jet. Cyclops blames himself because he's the field leader of the team. And Professor X, who was also psychically connected to Thunderbird the entire time, so he like felt everything that Thunderbird was feeling, blames himself for dispatching the team in the first place. Now, this story gives a lot more about Thunderbird's character, and it really kind of vexes me. Like, on the one hand, it's interesting to have flawed characters. On the other hand, I feel like a lot of the flaws in Thunderbird's character, his recklessness, his belligerence, his lack of ability to think logically, it's really rooted in anti-Native American stereotypes. And like I said before, I don't really know enough about portrayal of Native Americans to say conclusively that that's the case, but it definitely feels like it. And that's even more true in this story when he dies. This is a great story to set up the dynamics of the team, even more so than in Giant Size X-Men, because you see them interacting even more. And it also establishes the different niches of the characters. However, by just removing Sunfire from the team right away and then killing Thunderbird off so quickly, it really does take a lot away. Like, Thunderbird was presented as an interesting, conflicted character, but then to just get rid of him so abruptly and so immediately, it really seems like it's doing a disservice to that character, but then also a disservice to the team in general, because there were things about the team that he brought up and highlighted that, you know, now they aren't really going to be addressed as well. You know, how does the X-Men deal with someone who's very aggressive and angry, but at the same time really wants to do the right thing? And Wolverine will kind of fall into that role, but it would have been interesting to have Thunderbird there since he was portrayed that way from the beginning. Also, the X-Men are kind of juxtaposed with the Animen in a way that's really interesting. The Animen are also a group of outcasts that are brought together by a benefactor to work towards a common goal. However, the Animen are different and set apart, and they're outcasts because of what that benefactor, Count Nefaria, has done to them. He's the one who turned them into the Animen. He's the one who made them look so different and kind of abused them in that way. Whereas Professor Xavier is more of a benevolent benefactor, and he has found these people who were already set apart and were already outcasts and ostracized, and he's brought them together to support each other and then also to work for the good of humanity as a whole. So it's just an interesting thing to consider, I guess. Personally, I don't think the Animen are really very interesting villains, and I find Count Nefaria to be pretty annoying, but it is interesting to think about them and how they compare to the X-Men, I guess, and also think about Nefaria and how he compares to Professor Xavier. So the last story that we have is X-Men number 96, Night of the Demon, published December of 1975. And this was also written by Chris Claremont along with Bill Mantlo, and it was drawn by David Cockrum. So Cyclops is walking in the woods, blaming himself for the death of Thunderbird in the previous issue. In frustration, he unleashes his optic blast, accidentally damaging an odd monolith in the middle of the woods. Meanwhile, the remaining X-Men are training in the danger room to blow off some steam and frustration from their previous mission. The new housekeeper, Moira McTaggart, arrives and is greeted by Banshee, who is immediately attracted to her. Moira is introduced to the rest of the team, who view her with some suspicion since she's not a mutant, but their conversation is interrupted by Scott, bursting through the wall, having been attacked by a demon, Kierok the Damned. So the X-Men are unable to subdue Kierok, and Professor X learns from the demon's mind that he is not the only one of his kind, and more demons will emerge from the cairn if it's not destroyed. Storm flies off to destroy the cairn, but she's attacked by demons that are very similar to Kierok, except a little smaller. They look more like imps, and I guess the implication is that they're weaker, but they are able to sort of overpower her. And she ends up being pulled down into the cairn, which activates her claustrophobia and causes her to freak out. And this is definitely the most interesting part of this issue. It gives Storm's background and why it is that she has her claustrophobia. When she was a child in Egypt, she and her parents were in a home that was hit by stray bombs during the war between Egypt and Israel. So she was buried in the rubble with her parents who were killed for many, many days before she was rescued. And that left her with permanent claustrophobia. So because of that claustrophobia, she freaks out and unleashes all of her power, which in the end is a good thing because it destroys the cairn and it causes Kierok to vanish. So Storm is able to save the day by having a panic attack because of claustrophobia. So in this story, like I said before, we learn a great deal about Storm. She's been an interesting character from the beginning. She's been portrayed as the peacekeeper and very regal and queen-like. I mean, she was literally a goddess in Kenya. But learning about her crippling claustrophobia makes her even more interesting because it gives her a weakness. It gives her a vulnerability. We'll see the vulnerability of all of these new characters as the 70s and the 80s roll on. But seeing a character be vulnerable and seeing what makes them vulnerable always, for me at least, makes them more interesting and more robust. This story also serves to set up a later story arc involving the Sentinels, which is an interesting component of Chris Claremont's writing. Like, he's always seeding later stories, which makes his run as the writer for X-Men very interesting, and part of the reason that people responded so well to it, because it definitely seemed like from start to finish, he had planned out everything that he wanted to happen during his run, which isn't necessarily the case all the time. With some writers, it does seem like they're just kind of making things up as they go, or like the story is a little more serial, you know, where each story arc is kind of isolated from the others. And Chris Claremont definitely doesn't write that way, which kind of brings the X-Men up to a new level. Now that we have seen all of these stories and talked about them a little bit, it's time to go ahead and rank them. I've read 12 stories so far. At the top, I have X-Men number 12 through 13, Where Walks the Juggernaut, followed by the Factor 3 Saga. And then at the bottom, I've got X-Men numbers 54 through 56, The Living Pharaoh, followed by X-Men number 65, Before I'd Be Slave. And Giant Size X-Men number 1, I think, definitely goes at the top of the list just because it is introducing a new era of the X-Men. So I talked about how the debut of X-Men was kind of, it wasn't a very interesting story, and it was important because it introduced the new characters, but it didn't really grab me the way that, you know, I would want it to, or I hoped that it would. For Deadly Genesis, that's definitely not the case. Like, it's important because it introduces all these new characters and sets the tone for how the X-Men is going to be for the next couple of years. But then it's also very, very interesting. You know, it pulls you in from the beginning with the diversity of the character design and the diversity of the new characters. And then it brings in this really interesting villain in Krakoa, who's this really novel idea that you wouldn't expect, you know, a sentient island that feeds on mutants. That's pretty awesome as an idea. I'm definitely going to put Giant Size X-Men number one as at the top. I think that it's the best thing that I've read so far because of its impact, and then also just because of the ideas that it had and the way that it executed them. It's a really well-written story. So moving on to the second story on my list, numbers 94 through 95, the Doomsmith scenario. I think that this was a very good story. The death of Thunderbird gives it a lot of emotional depth. And then also removing the old X-Men from the roster and replacing them with the new X-Men kind of solidifies that what happened in Deadly Genesis is important and it's going to be the new normal and the status quo going forward in the X-Men. So I think that that's really important. I don't love the choice to kill off Thunderbird. It may be that Thunderbird was killed off to make this story more simple going forward because he and Wolverine kind of occupy the same space on the team. But I think it could have been handled better than that. And that's because I do think that Thunderbird was a really interesting character that had a lot of potential that just gets kind of cut short. And I do think he gets resurrected later, and maybe that'll bring in a little bit more. Also, his younger brother eventually joins the team and is kind of a sequel to him. But again, I just think that that decision was probably the wrong one and they could have done something better. Also, this was the issue that really, really made it clear that some of the characters of color, especially Thunderbird and Sunfire, are really rooted in stereotypes that are harmful, not only to the characters, but harmful to people in real life. So given all of that stuff, I'm going to compare it to the Sunfire story that's already on the list. It's at number 7, The Coming of Sunfire. And I'm going to say the Doomsmith scenario is just better than that because of the things that it introduces, but not quite as good as Among Us Stalk the Sentinels. That's going to be the new number 7 on the list. Final story that I've got is X-Men number 96, Night of the Demon. I think that Night of the Demon is a really good story, even though it's just one issue and it's a story arc that's very contained within itself. I do think that it's better than the Doomsmith scenario. I also think that it's better than Among Us Stalk the Sentinels. I think the only knock that I have about Night of the Demon is that it's more of like the story is introduced with Cyclops being like, oh, I'm not a good leader, and oh, my powers are so destructive and deadly, and they make me so miserable. And even at this point, which is really early in the X-Men, because that kind of thinking and that kind of storyline goes on for a very long time, but even at this point, it's gotten very tired. I'm really tired of Scott Summers complaining about his life and doubting himself as a leader. Like, either be the leader or don't. You've got to make a choice. So that being said, I'm going to say that Night of the Demon, I'm going to put it just above the Doomsmith scenario and behind Among Us Stalk the Sentinels. Giant Size X-Men number 1, Deadly Genesis, is going to be the new number 1 on my list. Night of the Demon, X-Men number 96, that's going to be the new number 8. The Doomsmith scenario, numbers 94 through 95, is going to be the new number 9 on my list.
So that's all I have for you guys this week. Please be sure to check out our Thursday episode, where Veronica, Melissa, and I will continue our discussion of Magneto. Thanks for tuning in to X-Minisode number 5, and have a great rest of your week.